Ladies and gentlemen, storytellers of all ages, lend your ears to co-hosts Brad and Philip as we delve into the Marketing Your Attraction podcast.
Welcome back to Marketing Your Attraction. This is episode 2. I'm Philip, and I'm joined with my co-host, Brad.
Hi, Phil. Welcome back to the episode 2. We're really excited to dive into some more interesting topics here about how you can better market your attraction and really how marketing and attractions work together.
So a brief recap. This is episode 2. We're recording it very close to each other. So we're testing this out, and we very much like feedback. The format we're working on right now is a brief intro, in a topical introduction, news, and then spending the bulk of the episode on a main topic and keeping it kind of within 30 minutes. So our main topic for today is going to be on crafting memorable moments, which we'll get into after our news section.
Yeah. So let's kick off the news. So something that it's always a social media platform that's always in the news. So last episode we briefly mentioned Snapchat, but primarily we focused on Facebook's algorithm change. We wanted to update you a little bit on what's happening with Snapchat, how they're expanding analytics. Philip, do you want to update our audience?
Yeah, this article I'm taking this from is from TechCrunch, and this is relatively recent. Not too recent in social media land, but it was announced mid-February, February 14th. And basically, they're rolling out a more in-depth analytics platform, and they're starting with their creators, and then they're going to be supposedly rolling this out for everybody. But Snapchat has been very difficult to really prove an ROI, really prove anything with your ads on it, and kind of figure out what you're doing with the platform. And the analytics that I really think are going to be interesting here, I mean, it'll give you your total story views, it'll give you total time spent and daily unique story views, average time and all that, which is important because you want to know what pieces of your content they're identifying with. But the thing I think is most interesting is that they're going to give you audience interests, as in like which lifestyle categories and things that your audiences care about, as well as your demographics, which I think at least the interest portion will be very interesting because you could potentially that can help you with your overall customer persona. You know, if you're seeing that your Snapchat users that are within this demographic range tend to also like these other interests, that can help inform a lot of your content decisions. And plus, the analysts will let you know in real time what pieces of your content is really resonating. So I think this is a very... I'm excited for this move. I don't use Snapchat, but I'm excited that Snapchat is finally kind of playing ball.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm surprised it's taken them this long. That's been my big frustration with Snapchat because a lot of marketers in the world, not just in attractions, but just in the overall world of marketing, they love to jump to the latest shiny object. And I think Snapchat was that shiny object for a long time. And when I took a look at it, a few years ago when it first launched, I just didn't understand how could we really know whether we're getting value out of this or not? It was such a black box, and it still is really right now. To your point, what content's working well? Who am I reaching to? How many people am I even talking to? they've had these weird things like the Snapchat score, or whatever they call that. I was like, that your only data, even on their like Snap ads, that they've just started to expand so you can actually target by demographic and by age and get a little bit more information from that. But it's tough to advocate for spending time creating content, managing a community on a platform where you're not getting any information. You can't justify that use of time at all. And so that's why I've personally really stayed away from Snapchat for the businesses that I've worked in over the years. So I'm happy that they're expanding analytics. I think the other thing they announced relatively recently was they're going the same way as Facebook, and they are looking at, they actually just launched a redesign of their app that separates family and friends content from influencer, celebrities, business content. So they're now having those in two separate feeds. And, as just as Facebook's doing, Snapchat's following along right there because they see that people are, I'm assuming, not as engaged with their platform anymore. They don't want that. They're trying to figure out, okay, how do we make sure that this family and friends content, which is typically the most engaging, I would imagine, is, you know, how is this more at the forefront of their experience? But then that's really relegating all of the content that we're creating as business content creators and all the influencers out there, celebrities, insert other social media buzzword, you know, here, all of that content that used to be mixed in and had the same value in a lot of ways as a post from a family or friend is now almost in this like back alley. And you know, it just goes back to what we spent a lot of time talking about last episode. So if you didn't hear last episode, definitely listen to episode one, where we talked about the dangers of building your business, your house on rented land, and having a social media platform own your audience. So another thing happening in news this week, this is a trend that's been going on for quite a while right now, is some of the new privacy laws that are finally coming into effect in Europe. Philip, do you want to briefly summarize what's probably a 1,000-page legal argument?
Yes.
and how it might impact the attractions industry and our audience specifically?
Yeah, so we're talking about the GDPR, which is going to come into effect in February. So probably it'll already be in effect by the time this episode airs. So first of all, it's data inside and outside the EU. So it's not a domestic thing, first of all. We don't want to really get into speculation as to, you know, what's important to us is if you, first of all, this directly affects you if you are any sort of global entity, or you do any business or advertising in that. But the second thing is this is definitely going to cause, in my opinion, aftershocks, because even the two people we've talked about, you know, Snapchat, Facebook, they're global entity. So, you know, one of the questions is, are we going to start to see a lot of the platforms that we use as marketers adjust to this GDPR, even though it doesn't necessarily affect us in terms of what we do or it's not regulated? And also, how is that, you know, kind of from a cultural standpoint, going to bleed over into what our customers expect us to operate in? And they're really cracking down on the way that you gather data. And really making sure that the person opts in, they give consent to it, and they understand what the data is being used for. And there's a lot in here on data processing and all that. And for Gantam, you know, we are global, and so that it is a little bit of a concern for us. But our content marketing platform is really like they're exchanging information for access to content, and it's very, you know, you give this and you get this, and so there's a definite opt-in mechanism there. So that's one of the reasons why I've been focusing a lot of our efforts on shifting over to our content platform as one of our primary marketing forces, because of this, you know, because we do have a lot of reps and distributors, you know, and a lot of customers and third-party clients that are out there. In terms of attractions, it's one of those things where I think making a plan now and being aware of how you are gathering your data, I think, becomes the important question.
Yeah. And I think if you're following best practices that the law mentions, it's a good idea anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you should only be sending information to people who have clearly opted in. And, I don't know the full extent of the law yet, and I don't think anyone will until it's implemented. But
we'll link to the whole article in case you want to go more into depth.
The big takeaway is just make sure you're not spamming people. Make sure you're not selling all the information that you're getting of your customers, and you're not exchanging it with, you know, other attractions without other people's knowledge. You know, just make sure that when you're sending out information, whether it be through email or text messages or even, you know, postcards, that people have really signed up for it. It's going to save you money in the long run too, because then you're only reaching people who clearly want your content. You're not being reported to spam filters. You're not going to possibly run into a legal issue if this law, you know, if parts of this law come into effect in the country that you live in. You know, right now it's really just Europe that's being impacted. But as Philip, as you mentioned, this has definitely broader issues, since so many of the platforms that we work with every day are global now and will most likely have to roll out these rules across all of the customers that use them. You know, whether it's a Facebook or a MailChimp or whatever email blaster customer relationship management CRM program that you use, you're probably going to see this impact you in some way.
I misspoke earlier. So the new regulation takes effect May 25th of 2018. And just also again to clarify, I can link to this, but to clarify that it does affect really anybody that deals with data processing kind of in any way, individuals or companies or nonprofits, organizations. You know, kind of if you're engaged in a data processing of any kind in the EU, then you know you're in effect. But I think it's something you should be looking into so that you can adjust your practices in the event that it does spill over here.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on to something that's a little less murky, kind of, or almost as murky as Google's search algorithm. That's always changing, and I think for most businesses, Google and Facebook, they make up about over 80% of the web advertising industry. So those are the two 800-pound gorillas, and they both are double-edged swords. You know, whether you're talking about organic or paid. The latest about Google is they're continuing to build a mobile-first index. I saw this on searchengineland.com. The last couple of years, they've been prioritizing listing websites in search rankings who have a great mobile experience and who don't necessarily have a separate desktop and a separate mobile website, but they have one website that's responsive. I don't want to dig too much into the tactics here. But as you're working on updating your website, or whether you're doing it yourself or you're working with different contractors, you really need to make sure that you have a responsive website, a website that works well on phones, smartphones, tablets, desktops, like that the experience is the same for all of your customers, no matter what platform they're on. And you need to make sure that it loads quickly. You know, there's all these best practices. And I would say searchengineland.com is a great resource for that. I know many of the attraction owners out there, and many of us that work in the attraction industry, we don't have programming degrees, we don't have website design backgrounds, but just educating yourself a little bit on what matters in today's world of website designs and search engine optimization could go a long way. Because if you're designing a website with Flash, that that customers just can't even buy tickets on their smartphone, it's not going to rank well on Google. You're not going to see great conversions either when you're running ads. And so I see that a lot with attractions, especially attractions that have been around for a while. Their websites are so outdated, and if they just invest a little bit of money and time into improving that experience, it has a ripple effect across everything you're doing, because your advertising will convert better, your search engine optimization will be better, your just the customers that are going directly to your website are going to convert better because it's easier for them. You know, so many guests nowadays, they're primarily just surfing the internet on their phone. They might not even have laptops.
Yeah,
but we see that all the time, and almost half, if not more than half, of all web traffic is coming from phones and tablets. So something really important to think about.
Yeah, I like that. I guess the only thing I would add is just to emphasize, especially in the attractions space, our websites are critical for us because they really are. You know, Gantam. our website's kind of like there, but the people that need to know about it, and they go there for specific reasons. But the attraction space is, on our attraction side, it's entirely different because they're going there. I mean, it's an integral piece in your sales funnel. Like they're going there to purchase tickets. They're going there to get information on your hours and your shows and on your, they're getting essential information. Google needs to be able to access that so they can help answer questions. Like the more you can get that information out to them, the easier it's going to make your buying experience ultimately. And that's why it's so critical for attractions.
Exactly. So let's move from our news items into our main topic. I'm really excited about this one. Philip's done a significant amount of research about this. So Philip, why don't we talk about creating memorable moments and how important that is for all industries and especially the attractions industry.
Whew, okay. We're going to speed through this, but to give a little bit of background on it, this year's theme for the Haunted Attraction Leadership Symposium, which I curate, it's a Gantam event, but you know I curate the event, and not only the theme for that, but the part of the theme for the next issue of the magazine has to do with this idea of crafting moments. It's sort of like sort of this ripple effect. I started researching the concept of first impressions, like an audience's first impression. And then kind of that was the rabbit hole. And I went down that hole, and the deeper I got down the hole, I realized, you know, there's these different layers of there's different pieces to this puzzle of what a first impression is composed of. And one of these pieces is what makes a moment actually memorable. Like, why do people remember certain things that they do at your attraction versus other things? There's a few factors in this, but that's the crux of this. And that's what our next issue, the magazine issue, is going to focus on. So I really did a lot of research, and I'm still researching different pieces of this into figuring out how to put that into words. The bulk of what I'm going to present today for the podcast is from The Power of Moments, Why Experiences Have Extraordinary Impact by Chip and Dan Heath, which are pretty prolific business writers. And what Chip and Dan Heath put forth is that you craft memorable moments through elevation, insight, pride, or connection. Those are the four components of creating a memorable moment. And the essence is, think of moments. Moments are, there's some things that are naturally fitting to moments. So, you know, transitions, as in your promotions, first day of school, end of projects, the first day of work, getting married, new day, new week, new year. We can also think in attractions of a definite transition is, you know, going, arriving and leaving a park, even going to the park. Seasonal events present these opportunities of natural transitions. And then milestones, those can be anything from achievements to birthdays, retirement. Again, another thing that ties to attractions, you know, coming to do a thing for your birthday at an attraction. That's a pretty classic milestone moment there. And then another, the kind of the inverse of those moments are those pit experiences, which are negative moments. But kind of the business case for this is kind of understanding that and this research is taken from Forrester, but basically Forrester's researchers built a model of financial value for a customer. And they found that, for example, airline customers who gives a 7 out of 10 rating spends $2,200 on air travel throughout the year versus customers that give a 4 rating spend only $800. So the basic concept is if you can elevate your customer experience just from a 4 to a 7, if you elevate the positives, you earn about 9 times more revenue than if you just go and eliminate the pit holes. I think as attractions, we spend a lot of time just dealing with the problems.
You know, exactly. Like
the guest complains, and then the alarm sirens go off, you know, and all this stuff. But what about setting up natural ways for them to have these elevated experiences that can help essentially take an average day at your attraction up to a 7, which then will increase the revenue that customer gives you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing. So what the Heath brothers suggest here is that there are 4 ways to do that, and you can use elevation, you can use insight, you can use pride, or you can use connection. And that's how you can either take a currently existing moment, which I think in the attractions space, we are already a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a moment to go to an attraction. So I kind of think we already have our natural moment there, but you could also enhance other moments. You know, can you do something extraordinary for a birthday, or can you really add some of these elements into other, can you combine these peaks, right? So essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to build peak things. So I'll briefly go through a few examples of some of these elements. Elevation is their first one here. Elevation is one of the easiest for us because essentially elevation refers to experiences that rise above the routine and they make you feel engaged, joyful, or motivated. The way I like to explain this to people is sort of like you can picture a heart monitor. You know, you got that jagged line. So you can think about your customer's journey at your attraction, like their day, as this read on this monitor, right? So how can you take those already natural peaks and elevate them even higher? Elevation's a pretty easy one for us because what they suggest to do to raise elevation is boosting sensory appeal, raising the stakes, and breaking the script. We naturally boost sensory appeal.
Yeah.
The attraction is itself boosting sensory appeal.
Yeah, I like the boosting the competitiveness, yeah, though, because I think that's something that attractions could do more of. Even something like, you know, our 4D Iron Reef ride, mm-hmm, at Knott's Berry Farm, this score component is such a big part of the rewritability of that attraction. Mm-hmm. And if you took that away, the attraction wouldn't be nearly as memorable.
I even think something like a little bit like the seasonal events a little bit, or just you kind of raise the stakes in some of these events just because it's fleeting.
Yeah, that limited time offering helps get people off the couch because there's just so many options in today's world that if they think, oh, okay, that's going to be there next year, the year after, like, there's not that urgency,
yeah,
to go and do it. And I think that makes it, to your point, it makes it more memorable.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm going to be one of the few people that actually gets to experience this during this time. And it just makes it feel more special. You know, that's why things like weddings and birthdays are so special.
Exactly.
If for some reason you were getting married every day, your birthday was every day,
yeah,
it wouldn't be nearly as special. It's that limited time moments.
Well, and it's weddings and birthdays you mentioned are weddings, especially the sensory appeal. I mean, look at how everyone shows up to a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
You're already elevating it just by that.
Yeah. And you see that a lot with cosplaying, mm-hmm, at different attractions and trying to encourage people. We recently did a promotion where we had Charlie Brown Day. We encouraged everyone to dress up as Charlie Brown. And even if you weren't participating in it, it boosted that sensory appeal because there's all of these people dressed in Charlie Brown t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was another way to bring to life that experience. So there's a lot of different ways you can take this strategy and make it into different tactics.
Yeah, and I really like the thinking a little bit more about raising the stakes too, especially with Scary Farm or other haunts out there. So I guess raising the stakes can also be interpreted as challenges that people can watch you do. You know, so if you're with a group of friends, you know, getting through an escape room, mm-hmm, or if people are watching you go through a maze, or you're going through a scare zone and people are watching you, like, kind of challenge yourself against a creature or a monster, you know. So and then I think those are also other elements of raising the stakes. You know, when does the audience have the opportunity to do a thing that other people can watch them do,
right?
That is some sort of challenging. Something that I liked was the Universal Orlando does their Mardi Gras event, and annual pass holders can sign up to audition to be on the float.
Oh, very
as,
cool.
As people that toss parade beads. So it's a little bit, there's boosting sensory appeal.
Mm-hmm.
It's breaking the script because you don't normally go to Universal to, you know, audition to be a parade float person. And also there's a little bit of, you know, a little bit of challenge, a little bit of raising the stakes there because it's a little barrier that you have to overcome to get, mm-hmm, to it. And you're also tossing stuff at people.
Exactly.
So
that's a great one.
And I think we're also really good at, or really, there's a lot of potential for breaking the script too at attractions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking the normal rhythm of what guests expect from your attraction, the culture, and then just kind of doing something to surprise it, to elevate
it. And my biggest advice for this strategy is don't feel like you have to think too big. You know, I think big ideas are great, but there's also little small things like giving out a free birthday button that can go a really long way to making that a memorable moment and making just elevating that experience.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be some huge grand gesture all the time. You can balance it out with smaller moments that are more scalable if you're at a bigger attraction.
Yes, exactly. It's all about, it's really about the concept of reducing negative variance and increasing positive variance. You know, you have to, obviously we have to make sure that the creature comforts are met at the attraction. But then kind of beyond there, it doesn't make a lot of sense really to chase a lot of the ones around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes more sense to do small things, things that break, as in things that are not, the other problem you get into is, you know, say if you empowered some of your F&B employees to like randomly give away some sort of like boysenberry thing during the Boysenberry Festival.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want it to become expected.
Right.
So it needs to be that balance of still breaking the script but not become part of the script.
Very true.
So it becomes,
and it needs to be expected. Genuine too.
Yeah.
And that's why employees, they make so many of these moments when they're given their freedom to. When they're able to, you know, turn that frown upside down, you know, if it's something as easy as a, you know, a kid has dropped an ice cream cone and you just go over and you give them a new one, that's a memorable moment that is unexpected.
Yeah, it's a concept of the use of strategic surprise, right? Mm-hmm. For breaking the script. The last example I thought was really impactful from the text was the analytics group at Southwest Airlines calculated that if they could double the number of customers hearing a funny flight safety announcement, that would result in more than $140 million in revenue per year.
It's a good chunk of change there, $140 million.
Just in hearing a funny safety announcement. So let's see. Is there another one we want to jump into immediately? I'm going to jump to connection because I think it might have a little bit more variance. We're running low on time.
Sure.
But they're using connection refers to moments of connection that bond us together. And it's a – so that this can be grouped into groups or individuals. We can look at it from the group standpoint. But basically, groups unite when they struggle together toward a meaningful goal. So for groups, you're looking at, one, providing a synchronized moment, two, inviting shared struggle, and three, connecting it to meaning. So this kind of reminds me of, like personal stories for this is like going through the Disney College program back when I was in college. It was a, you know, it was me and five other guys and like rooming together, and we were, like they collect everyone there at once, and then you're put through this program, and you're all there at the beginning, and you're there at the end for graduation, and then you're with your group of roommates to kind of live through everyday work at your attraction, and going through ops and doing all those like really mundane tasks, but you're struggling together, you know, as a group with the meaning that Disney inspired was, you know, you doing your job right means that this family can have this memory forever.
Yeah.
You know, and that so I think there's a duality here because there's an opportunity for us to use shared experiences in our teams, this shared struggle and connection in our teams to make moments for them that can bleed then out into their productivity. But it can also the other side of that is how to create moments of connection with our guests and with them as a group.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many, I feel like there should be a bigger focus on that in the attractions industry, because there's so many times where we're splitting groups up, you know, you see that, whether it's a roller coaster and then, you know, is there a bench for the rest of the families to sit around there? But even if there's a bench, you're still breaking that connection. So when you see these great family rides and experiences where the entire family is going through it together and they're building that connection and having those memorable moments together, those tend to be some of the most popular attractions, rides at your attraction. I think that's been a big success of escape rooms.
Yeah.
But I recently went to an escape room in Orange County where it wasn't very flexible on the number of people you had. So I was going in with a group of like 9, and it would only take like groups of 5 or something. And so we ended up not being able to go because it wasn't able to scale to those different group sizes. So I think that's always a challenge for your attraction, but just keep that in mind. The more that you can keep people together, the more flexible you can be on groups, because now we're seeing, especially in the Asian parks in Asia, it's extended families. It's mom, dad, kids, but it's also grandma, grandpa. Mm-hmm. We see that a lot here at Knott's Berry Farm. And so just having live entertainment, it doesn't have to be the entire experience that they're doing together, but there should definitely be important parts during the experience where that entire group, whether it's extended family or a group of teenagers or whatever your target demographic is, that they're able to go through that experience and make these memories together. So just keep that in mind as you're designing attractions.
Yeah, I like that, especially emphasizing that, it needs to be a synchronized moment. So like Brad was saying, all at once, right? And then it's some sort of shared, ideally there's a shared struggle. That's kind of hard because a lot of the attractions aren't meant to be a struggle per se, escape rooms are, but, and then this kind of like the larger meaning, and I don't know, I haven't seen too many people do all three of these at an attraction, but it'd be very interesting to see it done, or to see if there's a way for you to connect that synchronized moment that they're having at the park to this, overall meaning. The parents connected to meaning because, mm-hmm. The parents are there to make this wonderful experience. But, do the kids understand what they're also trying to create, for the parents? Does the whole family understand? And is that at all part of our responsibility?
Right.
Foster? I don't know. Right. I don't have the answers, but.
You're almost like, how do you create instant nostalgia?
Yeah.
And I think some of these things pay dividends later on. Mm-hmm. If you do it really well, if you're able to build that connection, these memorable moments, this is what the kids remember when they're 14, 15, when they're 20, 30, when they have kids and want to bring their kids back, is they're remembering those memorable moments they had at your attraction. And it's just really, it's really important to sit down and think about, what do I want my guests to take away? I think the easiest way is we all have our own memorable moments at attractions and in our life. You're sitting down and thinking about some of those best ones and what helped create that, both from the business side, but also just from the luck side and the conditions of that day. Like, why are those moments so memorable? So that's just a little bit of insight in Philip's insight into memorable moments. What was the book again, Philip?
It was called The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath.
Yeah, and they also wrote the great book Made to Stick.
Yes.
So they're
and definitely Decisive as
and
well.
And Decisive, yeah. So if you're looking for a new audiobook or book to check out, I definitely recommend those authors. So that's all we have for this week's episode of the podcast. Philip, what have you been up to before we sign off?
Well, so we're recording this kind of the end of February. I'm about to head to the Social Media Marketing World, which is February 28th through the beginning of March. And then I'm flying down to Texas for a little bit, then from Texas to Fort Lauderdale for USITT. And then I'm driving up to Disney World. And I was going to just, hang out at Disney World as I am prone to do for a few days, but my parents decided that we should have a moment where we celebrate their birthdays.
How selfish of them.
I know. So I guess that's happening. And then I'm flying from there to St. Louis for the Halloween show there in St. Louis, and then coming back to L.A.
That's quite a schedule.
Just a little bit.
I don't know how you do it to fill up with the travel schedule. It scares me. I'm flying out next week as well to visit our park Carowinds for our once a year all marketing hands meeting where we get all of the marketing teams from all the Cedar Fair parks together. And we,
for a synchronized moment?
For a synchronized moment, yeah. Yeah, no, it's always fun because a lot of these people I haven't met before because we have so many different parks and there's always turnover every year. And so it's always nice to meet people in person for the first time. And we're going to be spending the whole week talking about best practices and we'll have different guest speakers. And I'm excited. I've never been out to Carowinds. Unfortunately, like most of our marketing conferences and our corporate conferences at Cedar Fair, they always happen when the parks are closed. So I'll be walking through a empty, closed Carowinds, you know, just admiring all of the amazing rides and not being able to ride Fury, their recently opened roller coaster, their Giga Coaster out there. But I'm looking forward to the trip and looking forward to learning more. And we'll talk to all of you soon. So look forward to episode 3 coming down the pipeline. And if you haven't checked out episode 1, definitely do. Make sure to hit subscribe in whatever podcast application you're using, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.